Yeah, there is John and Jonathan or Jonathan?
Jonathan or Jonathan, whatever you feel best.
What do you go by?
Jonathan, typically.
Okay. That's a pretty good name because it's kind of like two names put together.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan from the Bible, really good guy. Then John and Nathan and Joe. It's like, I guess it's like three words, but I knew a kid named Jonathan.
Oh, really? I've never heard that one.
So when I see your name up there on the text or the email, automatically think Jonathan. So you're calling from Michigan?
That's right. Yep, around the Lansing area.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So near Michigan State?
Absolutely, yeah. It's only about like a 30-minute drive from where I am.
Yeah. That's kind of like my favorite schools.
Do you know?
They're kind of like one of my favorite schools to pull for.
Yeah. They have a very good sports program.
Yeah, we think they're kind of like underdog to Michigan. But then every time you turn on TV, they're beating Michigan or something.
Usually they are, yeah. And it's funny because I have so many friends who are U of M fans who are just coping every season. Like, they get one win off somebody. They're like, see, we're better than MSU. It's like, well, hold on there, buddy.
Yeah. Well, we got JR here with us. He helps moderate, and maybe Eric will show up later. But you know what's funny is over there on TikTok, I'm just totally, I don't know if I just can't get in. I mean, I like as far as socially interacting with people, I just have a hard time with it. Like, I won't check my inbox for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't friend back, share back. I'm just totally a dud on TikTok, but I'm the other way around on everything else. I'll talk you to death, but I just don't get TikTok. Hadn't figured out. And, you know, it took me, I think it was last week before I realized who you were on TikTok.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You're like, holy cow, I remember this guy, maybe a little bit.
It's like, you know how sometimes you can't tell. One thing I hate about reading comments is sometimes you can't tell if someone's backing you up.
Yeah.
Or attacking you. Because, mm-hmm. like, especially if it's me, because you don't know if I'm being stupid or backing you up in a friendly way or setting you up to make me, you know, I just don't know. But I think last week I saw you on there and I said, well, hey, that's Jonathan. That's Jonathan.
Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah, I've been going live lately too because I want to try to build up my presence on TikTok as well as trying to do YouTube stuff here and there. I'm still new to YouTube entirely, but the TikTok space is super easy to get into right away. And so it's very easy for someone who wants to do content to just jump in right away and build a following. And that's kind of what I've been attempting to do.
There's a lot of easy tools on TikTok.
Yeah.
Man, like having a doggone Hollywood studio in your hand. I know a lot of the older folks. Hey, Dez. I know a lot of older folks don't get TikTok, which, you know, I don't, but compared to, I maybe shouldn't say it, I might get shadow banned, but like YouTube's like this, hey Keith, YouTube's like this, is like the old man in the room.
Yeah.
They could do two or three things good, like tell a story, you know, or maybe he can whittle, and that's it. And then you got TikTok is a young buck that can do anything in this world. Hey, Haley.
Yeah, it contributes to a lot of the loss of attention span, though, in my opinion. I'm much more of a YouTube person. I listen to it while I drive or while I do work at my job. And I listen to a lot of, like, Reason Theology, you know, all those guys, and try to just soak it all in while listening.
So how long have you been Catholic?
So I came back September of 2022. And before then, I spent, like, a couple years maybe discerning faith and not necessarily being non-believer, but just trying to see what is out there and what I truly do believe and to choose a church, I guess.
Well, what brought that up? You said you came back. a lot of people do that. Hey, Lou, let's just kind of roll. Were you baptized Catholic as a baby or raised in the church?
Yeah. So I was baptized Catholic and I was raised in the Catholic faith after I was like, since I was a really early kid. And I lived with my grandparents for a long time, and they forced me to go to church, which I wasn't a huge fan of when I was a young kid. But so I didn't want to go ever. And so when they were forcing me to, I felt like, well, they don't like me because they know I don't like it. And I didn't really understand the importance of it. And it kind of drew me away from that a lot. But it wasn't until later that I decided to fully break ties on that.
Well, when you left are you saying it was your grandparents primarily were your faith leaders?
Yes. My mother, as sweet as she was busy all the time working and stuff. So I don't blame her whatsoever for this. But my grandparents were primarily the ones who led me in the faith from the very beginning. However, the explanations or the theological explanations weren't there, which I don't blame them for that either, because most lay people aren't super well-versed in that stuff either, right? So, but there was just a lot of familial things and a lot of logical conclusions that I came up with through study and scientific research and stuff that I decided, well, it doesn't make sense sort of thing, you know?
What, can you give us an example? What?
Oh, some stuff that drew me away. Yeah, so experientially, I'll say there was a priest in my old parish who, you know, as a younger kid, like 10 or 12 years old, I went to him asking questions so I could figure out what the church believes and how it can work with logic and everything too. And I came to him with earnesty and asking these questions, but all I got were, it's in God's timing. It's like, okay, well, all right. It doesn't tell me anything. But on the scientific aspect of it, I was very interested in cosmology or astrophysics. And so that drew me into the scientific field. And through that, I started seeing these natural processes that develop the universe and seeing these beautiful things come out of it. I was like, okay, these are all explainable by this, that, and the third. How can we explain God like this? There doesn't seem to be any way to do so. And so, you know, on top of the experiential things, as well as the science stuff, it had a nice little mixture of creating a little angry boy in me. So I was lashing out towards believers and went out of my way to debate them pretty heavily. So, you know, I'm not proud of that.
Did you have anger? Was anger, I mean, sometimes people lash. I've noticed a lot of guys, Bubba Gump, you can ask questions if you want to. It's just, we'll try to keep reading them. A lot of people, I think, like atheists, you know, I never see them in comments trying to ask real questions. They're always, about 95% of them, or they're in attack mode. They're mad or they're mocking or something. And I'm wondering, to me, I've only met a couple of people that I felt like were really godless.
Yeah.
And they were bad people. They were just godless. They were true atheists or closer to atheists as I could think of. And all the others I've met were offended I got the impression they're saying something for you to prove them wrong.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And the anger comes from somewhat of a position of superiority in a way too, because I know for a fact myself, I thought that anyone who believed in God was unintelligent and that they were less intelligent because they chose to believe in some fairy tale rather than live in the real world and see the beauty and the staggering just glory of this world by itself and its own natural development, right? And so you get that, and then you see, I feel like it also has a little bit of need for attention from those people too, because they didn't have enough of something like that. Not enough people really cared about their thoughts. I think that kind of relates back to the priest story, to where it makes them feel insignificant, and that's why they need more attention in a lot of ways.
I had an experience somewhat like you when I was a kid and starting to maybe think outside of the church. You know, hear one thing at school and in the science book, history book, then you read the Bible, you hear the Bible, you go to church, and it's like there's no answers. There were no answers coming from Larry Spitzer is really good. There's no answer from the pulpit. So I went to, I grew up Southern Baptist, very racially charged at the time, all white Southern Baptist church in Alabama. And I remember my pastor used to sit in a big chair like a bishop before church during singing and all, then go to the pulpit to preach his glorious message. But I remember I went up there because I had something on my mind. It was probably about 5 or 10 minutes before church. I walked up there and asked him, could I talk to him? I had some questions. Mm-hmm. And I asked about evolution and things like that that I was just hearing about. And, I was already, here's the Bible and creation and Jesus and miracles. Then here's all this stuff I'm hearing at school. And they were not compatible.
Yeah.
His answer was, you're just going to have faith, son.
Just believe, faith.
Like the Santa Claus in the movie Christmas Story when he's trying to get rid of the kid.
Yeah. Get away, kid. Just have faith. Oh, man, I love that movie. Yeah, and it's crazy, too, because there's a lot of people who, in the church like that, who... I don't really necessarily fault the priest because not all of them are theologians necessarily either, right? Like they're seminarians, they learn enough to lead the church, but to a certain extent, you would expect the people who lead the church to have enough knowledge to deal with simple questions like those, like what is the purpose of life? Like I feel, most priests are capable of dealing with those questions. Even Baptist preachers or Protestant preachers of any sort, they have the philosophical knowledge to really deal with that too. So I don't feel like there's too much excuse.
You think he just brushed you off because it didn't feel like it?
It definitely felt like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brushed off.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Is there any one thing that kind of made you that jumped out to reconsider? Was there
a reconsider thing? So yeah, there was a handful of events. So I'll try to keep it as short as possible to and everything. But I was confirmed in the Catholic Church when I was younger because I wanted to appease my grandparents and my family. I was all for just doing that and then being like, all right, see ya, I'm out of here, that kind of thing. Because I was totally done at that point, or even before confirmation. But it came down to choosing a confirmation saint. I struggled because I didn't know the Bible. I didn't care about it. And only reference point I had was, I was like, I guess there's this cool kid at school who his name's in the Bible. So I guess I'll choose that. And so after leaving the church, I spent a good long time going out of my way to argue with people who are believers and to make them feel like the dumbest things on earth, which I definitely don't, I feel bad for it, but coming back to it now and thinking about it, there was so many different events. I mean, one big one to kind of illustrate this, there was, imagine a 1 week, right? And this happened all in 1 week. On a Wednesday, I met a girlfriend who's now an ex, and then who was Christian, non-denominational. I was like, oh, sure. Yeah, that's fine. I'll try dating her, right? And then I joined a Catholic death metal band as a guitarist. And, where the band members were all Catholic. And then after that, the Friday of that week, I got a job where the only other coworker I had was Christian, like a Baptist Christian. So I was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of weird, but these kind of things happen sometimes. Christianity is still popular in the US. So it wasn't until after COVID started where I lost the job. So on that Friday, I lost that job. And then the band and I broke up later on. And then I end up breaking up with the girlfriend at the time afterwards. So it's such a weird occurrence that kind of brought my mind to say, hey, wake up a little bit because someone's trying to talk to you, right? It wasn't until I visited with my grandmother up in Traverse City, Michigan, where I went to mass with her just to be polite, right? Because I didn't necessarily believe 100%. But this overwhelming feeling of love and that came from the church, and this, there was this presence that made me feel like I wanted to keep going and keep going back and back. So I did. I went back to my hometown church, and I went to a confession after 12 years of being a non-believer, right? And that confession was probably the most heavy thing I've ever experienced, to be honest with you.
Just out of the blue, went to confession, huh? Did you sit down and make a list, or did you already have it on your heart?
Well, I think it was mostly on my heart and mind.
It's what?
I think it was mostly on my heart and mind most of the time, because I was very aware of what I've done in the past, and I grew up always being very aware of my actions, because I always had this idea of self-improvement. So that's kind of how I grew up and how I started developing as an adult. So I always keep things in mind for future reference and all that too.
Bubba Gump there, he asked a question about why doesn't the church sell her wealth and feed the poor? Would you like to address that? We've never heard that.
So how does the church justify that flash and flare? Oh, so you're talking about the video of the Pope and gold everywhere. Well, I don't know if you knew this, Bubblegump, but the Pope is actually probably one of the most humble people I've ever met. He lives in a very poverty-stricken area of the Vatican. Even though the Vatican itself is gorgeous, the whole city and the whole country is built that way to be holy, but he lives in a very poverty-stricken part of it on purpose, because he doesn't want all this fame and glory, right? The priests and the bishops wear these vestments to represent God's life during the liturgical year. It's not just, you know, we want to wear them to look like wizards or anything, right? Like, there's a big biblical reason for these things happening all the time.
Yes, a lot of people don't realize how much the church gives to the poor. I mean, they really don't. They shoot it out there so much, but I read a stat. I read so much about how the Catholic Church gives more to charity than Apple makes profits every year. And that's astounding. But, you know, just right here, I live in a place where there's this many Catholics, you know. Alabama, there's no Catholics hardly.
Oh yeah.
We have help for the poor all over this city.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. Catholic missions all over Baptist Birmingham, you know.
Yep.
I know we got where I go to church at the cathedral downtown. One of our sister church, I don't know if you call it that or not, but the parish across from ours that I was actually confirmed in, they adopted a whole county.
Oh, wow.
A whole county.
That's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it's Utah County. Not like the state Utah, but it's an Indian word. So is Utah, but this one's sort of from the E. And about 1 week in a month, the whole freaking church goes down there with lawnmowers, weed eaters, money, coats, cash, food, groceries, mechanics, electricians, carpet, everything, and they just start giving, you know, they spend the whole weekend.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Out of thousands and thousands of churches. But, you know, I wonder why people never complain about rock bands and presidents. I mean, why don't the White House give away that big mansion and give it to the poor, you know? Why not give Air Force One, sell it off and give it to the poor? It's only when it comes to the church. And the church, you know, if you read the first part of the Bible, there's instructions on how priests are to wear dresses. Yeah. Does that bother you when you come back?
No, I don't see the church's things as an issue, at least not anymore, right? And I think it used to bother me. a little bit when I was younger and still an atheist, right? Because I was like, I think it's because people tend to hold the church to a different standard than the rest of the world, because the church is the ones that claim that they are so good, or so, you know, they know the truth about Jesus Christ, right? So the world itself sees, especially the secular world, sees the church as this monolith that pretend that says, hey, we know the truth kind of thing. So they feel like there's a pedestal that these people have to reach to or something like that.
That's a good point. You know, a Protestant one time said that the reason everybody goes after you guys is you guys have an air of authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess like the United States does in politics, you know, we're America and this is the way it's going to be. So the church is like that. Our church is the only church that says this is God. We've decided that this here and this here and this here is God's word. And the rest of this stuff is not God's word. And no other
exactly.
Unless to take
exactly. It.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also America has a problem with authority just in general because of our founding, right? And I think it's tends to be an issue when it comes to religion in general. That's why Protestantism is so widespread here. In Europe, you didn't really have that problems to this extent. But once the Americas were colonized, you saw them, they banned Catholics from being in the U.S. for quite a long time. In fact, they actually, I forgot which group it was, but they started the KKK to mock Catholics as well with their garb that they took from a different rite. And so they do everything they possibly can to show hatred because they recognize us as an authority. They have to. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any point in mocking us.
Just like the oil. When they steal the host to do the satanic, the black mass.
Yeah.
They call it a black mass. They don't call it the black camp meeting, you know, or the black revival. It's the black mass.
You know, I love that. Yeah. And I saw a story of John Ramirez, who was a well-known Satanist priest, apparently. And his story blew my mind wide open after becoming Catholic again. I was like, spiritual warfare is on the mind constantly now, and I have to be very careful because it's very, very real. And you everybody should be careful, no matter what denomination or anything you believe in. Although I would, I'm not trying to be uncharitable by saying this, but I feel like the Protestants don't have to worry about it as much because they don't have the true host, they don't have the true Eucharist, right? They don't have the body, flesh, blood, divinity, and soul of Jesus Christ in their mass. So.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, you hear about all these Catholic church being vandalized all over the world, especially in Africa and Asia. You know, they get bombed and terrorist attacks and all because, you know, it's just like the cowboy analogy of the cavalry was guarding the wagon trains going out west.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say the word Indian, Native, what are they now, First Nation?
People of color, I guess, because they all lump them together nowadays.
Well, the people that was here after the Vikings, I'll put it that way, you know, they were going after the wagon train, but they knew where the rifles were, those repeater. Mm-hmm. They knew from their intelligence, that's all they went after. They didn't care about the rest of that cavalry. They were after that one wagon. They would send all their braves firepower to take the rifles, and that's the way it yep. is. You know, they're always going after Catholic Church because they're the one with the rifles.
Yeah, just like the LA Dodgers Stadium during their halftime show or whatever. I don't know if you heard about it recently, but it was the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, you know, pole dancing on a crucifix, which really made me super upset at the time. And I was sitting there like, I gotta do something about this. I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm gonna try to do something, you know. But there's always attacks on the Catholic Church. I mean, when you see anybody secular attacking any church, it's 9 times out of 10 going to be the Catholic Church. Because one, they have to they realize that it's an authority to mock. And two, they notice it as legitimate. And three, that's the only thing they can do is mock it.
Yeah. Well, let me, a few minutes ago, you said you were in a metal band. Did you say death metal?
Yep. Catholic death metal band called Voluntary Mortification. They are Michigan born and bred, and I was one of the original members, and I, you know, had a falling out with them, so that ended up going with Stray. But it was such a fun band. I played 8-string electric guitar for a while, and I was like, okay, I want to join a band. I want to go on stage and stuff like that. So I started, you know, making music with them, practicing a lot. And the vocalist, his name was Connor. He was one of the most revolutionary people in helping me come back to faith too. So he is, and still was back then, a very devout Catholic and very well-read Catholic. And I bounced ideas off him, even though we didn't believe the same things. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if faith is true, then how can we reconcile all these scientific differences, right? But he's like, what do you mean, bro? They're the same thing. I'm like, huh? So he went through and was like, well, you know, you have Galileo, you have, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, you have Georges Lemaître, who were all just prominent scientists. And even, I forgot, oh, was it Gregor Mendel as well? I think he created the genetic model. Anyway, so, and him, I was like, okay, well, what about the Big Bang Theory? He's like, dude, the Big Bang Theory was made by a Catholic priest. So I was like, all right, well, I didn't know that. So now I have to rethink my whole thing here. So, there actually was a point previously to that, that I was talking to a friend of mine where I was like, okay, well, if you, God could be real, how does he create the universe, right? Because we don't know necessarily what was before the Big Bang. So, you know, by all, you know, lines of reasoning, he could have made that happen and then put evolution into place. So I don't know. It was a huge mind blowing moment for that.
Do you ever heard of a British illusionist named Derek Brown?
No.
You can, if you got a pen, you can write his name down. I think it's Derrick Brown with the E, Browne. And I don't know how big time he is now, but, you know, like in the 2000s, he was, had a couple, two or three live primetime TV shows in the UK and a million. Oh, wow. He's a real smart guy. He's the type of guy that can, you know, like hold an object like this.
Yeah.
New bottle or a tablespoon and it vanishes. And you what? Know, like he performs magic and illusions on TV all the time. He's very famous in Europe. And he flew me in to help him. He was going to do a show exposing faith healers, you know, television. Wow. And somehow, one thing led another, he flew me out there and to help him train the televangelist that was going to be. What they did is they got this surfer dude. I think he was from Australia or something.
Of course.
They invented a huge testimony. I mean, the guy's unsaved, hippie, dope smoking, you know, drinking hippie. He don't know anything about theology. He's a surfer dude.
Yep.
So Darren wanted to teach him enough to preach a sermon, and they made up some big, huge testimony, like this hippie surfer dude was in had some kind of near-death experience. God came to him and healed him, and now God's given him the gift of healing. And if you'll come to these shows, they're at the theater. It was at this theater in Dallas, one of those trendy arts. Mm-hmm. And so they mass wall-to-wall media, billboards, TV, radio. And he flew me out there to help me get the guy ready. And so, you know, what he's going to do is have the guy out there and have it set up with people getting healed and everything in the audience. And then in the middle of it, he was going to tell the truth. And that was his idea because Derrick Brown was offended that people were being duped and lied to in the name of religion, that they're giving their heart and their money, right? So I'm not sure how it ended, but HBO made a documentary about it. It's called Miracles for Sale. And really? It's only, I'm in it, unless they've removed my part, I'm in it. But I'm saying this because I spent the whole day with the guy. He's an atheist. He was raised both Catholic and Pentecostal. Both Catholic family, devout, on fire Catholic, the other side, lunatic, Pentecostal, snake handling, jumping the pews, faith, both work. So we're talking about evolution, and he believes in evolution 100%. And my question to him is, you're saying, I was talking to Dan, you're saying that there's no driving force pushing this evolution. What is pushing these to be frogs, these to be birds, these to be, what's behind it? Nothing ever comes from nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, my understanding of evolution since I started, you know, studying science and everything was that it was a change to the environment that caused genetic mutations that cause offspring to be different and to adapt to those new environments that they're a part of. Right. And I mean, we do see that with different breeds of animals too. Like we see like polar bears, for example, have white fur so they can survive in that climate. But I don't believe that there is nothing driving that, of course. I believe there has to be some sort of starting point and driving force that continues to make those evolutionary changes possible. And I fully believe, especially now, that there has to have been God starting everything right away. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you a question, though. It's kind of on topic. You know, because people ask the question, okay, Asian people. How they say their eyes are more narrow because of the climate and the sun. I say BS. Okay? That would mean everybody in Norway, Sweden, Canada, and they would have narrow eyes from the climate. I just don't get it. What would you have said back then?
For Asia specifically, I'm not entirely sure, but what I would infer from that would be due to the tropical nature of the area, plus the mixture between not only tropical in certain, you know, Asian areas, but also the mixture of that and other regionals like mountains and everything like that too. But that whole region of Asia is very unique and diverse, similar to the United States. So it's hard to get a good idea of what causes that necessarily in terms of climate. But I believe it was climate as well as interbreeding between different countries or different people during the time, because that whole landmass is almost always super connected, and it has been forever. But there's a variety of different variables that we could try to, you know, explain away with.
What would you think about this? Have you got your DNA done?
I have not yet.
Okay. It's gotten so cheap. I'm not sure how inexpensive. I mean, it's gotten, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. They have $15 kits now at Walmart or something.
Yeah. But
I've had my done twice, my DNA done twice. And it's getting to where just about everybody I know has, you know, friends, family. And it's funny to me how that DNA only tracks back a certain amount of time. And then it peters out. And I don't see no ape men. And I don't know what your nationality, ethnicity is. You know, we both appear to be white, Caucasian. But if you spit in that little bottle and send it off to the place, they're going to send you a printout that's going to have where your daddy's people's from.
Yeah.
Don't even give them any names. They got your daddy's people, your mom's people. You're going, oh, damn. This is good.
It's, you know, accurate, yeah.
States they came from, and there's footprints all the way to the origin, but they only go back.
Well, I wonder if it has to do with how viable the DNA is going back, because I know that, you know, with mixing different genetic codes and genes, it sometimes can break down beyond a certain point. But I'm not entirely sure how that works 100%. But I do know that my grandparents and my family were very particular about teaching me what my background was, and it was a good thing too, because I got to learn about my family in the past. Right, we came from primarily Germany, and as well as Poland, And my father was, I think, French-Canadian, but he was adopted, so I'm not entirely sure. So French-Canadian, probably a little bit of Irish or Irish in him because he has red hair. Yeah, other than that, I'm not entirely sure, but definitely mostly German and Polish, I think.
Well, you know, all Christians have the same DNA as Catholic, and they can decide all they want. But every Baptist, every Methodist, every non-denominational can trace their spiritual DNA to King Henry VIII.
Yeah.
They can say, I'm not a part of that. Well, you know, it's like, I can trace my ancestry to pre-colonial North Carolina.
Wow.
But guess what? We didn't own slaves. We was practically slaves, dirt poor. I mean, picture dirt barefoot in the dirt. Okay. But even if they did hold slaves and if they were involved in the Klan and they were white supremacists and all that, and I know they weren't Catholic back then.
Right.
I can claim all I want. It don't change the fact that their DNA comes from your part of the world too, where they were all Catholic.
Yeah.
There was nothing in the world that was Christian that wasn't Catholic.
Exactly. So, amen.
The spiritual DNA is there. What's your favorite thing about being Catholic now that you came back home?
You know, that's a hard question to answer because there's so much. And I guess I'll tell you a little bit about the confession that happened. I won't like go into details, of course, but Father had me go through at first the Ten Commandments to basically be like, all right, well, here's a good guideline to start with, right? And so he went down like, have you killed anybody? I was like, no. He's like, thank God. And so after going through all this, I just had this weight taken off of me. It seriously felt like the weight of the world just went off my shoulders in an instant as soon as he said that you are absolved, right? And you know, even before then, I was very passionate about faith, and I still wanted to bring people to God who didn't believe, and that was kind of been my goal. Sorry, my dog's whining. So I always wanted to bring people to God, and I was like, how do I do this? I want to make a podcast or something. TikTok's super accessible, so I decided to do that. But then he had me read The Conversion of Saul to Paul. And so I was like, okay, don't know what that is, but I'll read it. And it's, you know, I'm sure you know the story as most people would do as they believe, but Saul, you know, persecuted Christians and killed them, did all manner of evil towards them. And then when he was confronted by Jesus Christ himself, he became blind and went to Damascus and then was, you know, unblinded. And then he believed he was like the best evangelist. He went through everywhere and taught across the world the teachings of Jesus Christ. So it's funny because when I read that, I was like, okay, Father, I see what you're doing here. You're saying that I basically followed this path. And I bet you won't know what my confirmation saint was back when I didn't care about faith.
Paul.
It was Paul. So now I hear that some people say that your confirmation saint chooses you. And I fully believe that now because of all this. And looking back at it, I was like, how did I not see this like right in front of me? Like, I chose this name randomly because I just didn't care, and then lived out that kind of lifestyle and almost not like word for word, of course, but in such a similar way and fashion that it's like uncanny, honestly. And back to what's favorite is the saints. I love participating in the body of Christ so much. And learning about people who were great theologians or just great people all over, that it just really riles me up and gets me saying, you know what, we should honor these people who came before us and who followed the path to God and are now made holy. Like, there's no reason now to say, well, they can't hear your prayers and no, they're dead in the grave and all that stuff that people say nowadays. I have to keep telling them, like, well, you're calling God a liar then if you think they're dead, because he's the God of the living. So
now, why is it okay? Now, People think I pick on Protestants, but my whole family's Protestant. I live in the Protestant world. I was Protestant for 50 years. I went to Protestant seminary, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny they say that. Now, I never thought that as a Protestant. Why are you praying to dead people? They're dead.
Yeah.
Because as a Baptist, I believed when a Christian died, they were more than alive than ever.
Exactly.
And the brakes on that, they go from, you go straight to Jesus, there's no purgatory. You go to heaven or hell, straight to Jesus, straight to those streets of gold, but they think you're dead while you're up there in heaven.
Yeah.
With all these scriptures, the great cloud of witnesses, dead Moses showing up with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. You know, we got Lazarus and Father Abraham and the rich man all there in the same Bible passages, talking and remembering each other, but they're dead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, even if Protestants decided to read the Book of Tobit as well, they would see that the angels are able to hear and see what's going on Earth. And I read through the Book of Tobit with a whole bunch of my Protestant friends, and we were trying to go through it and be like, why was this removed? You know, and there was a lot of good information in there, like, because Raphael was the angel of healing and medicine, right? And so it's crazy to think that they think it's not canonical because of some whatever reason they hold. But when we read through it, it mentions an archangel by name. That's a huge deal. I don't think they realize how big of a deal that is, because we only know the names of two, Gabriel and Michael, so far, mm-hmm. From the New Testament. So having one in the Old Testament that was already revealed to us and then saying, oh, we don't care about that one, let's get rid of it. Honestly, I think it was because of misaligned theology mostly. But then we see, you know, in 2 Maccabees, Jeremiah comes down after after someone prays to heaven, and he comes down and gives them a gift of a golden sword. Like, yeah, they can hear us.
When I was a Protestant, there's a huge deal made out of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they found these ancient texts that are like 99.9%, just like what we got in the Bible, but they don't also jump up and down that some of those Catholic scriptures was in there with the Dead Sea Scrolls. They'll never admit to that, you know. But
I think weren't the Dead Sea Scrolls mostly books that were found in the Greek Septuagint as well?
I'm not sure that they were Septuagint or not, but funny to say that, because the Septuagint is exactly what Jesus had.
Yeah.
Jesus and Paul would have had, and they're there, you know, they're there. Although I remember being in seminary and them, I'm not sure where it was, but I think the name of the part of the class was Hard Sayings of Jesus, or where did that come from? Where actually Paul quotes Jesus, and the non-believers say, see, the Bible's got a contradiction. Jesus never said that, right? But really, what it was something out of one of those Catholic books, out of mm-hmm. book, something. And also, had to let dog out. I don't know if you know my son, Brian, Catholicism on Instagram, but he's come up with some things about that too. I don't know, man. It just seems like, to me, you seem like real cerebral.
Sometimes.
Okay, now you're a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you good in math?
I can be.
Yeah, I've seen that with musicians and math, because my wife is both, and she says they're the same thing. And when she tells me, I don't know what she's talking about, because I'm a math. I tell my kids at school, ask me anything in the world but math, because I may give you the right answer, but tell you the wrong way to find it, and you'll be crippled in life. So, how do you, a lot of guys can only think like with their science part of their mind.
Yeah.
And some artists, I'm not sure how I'm going to say it, but you can be real intelligent in some areas and maybe dumb as rocks in another area, but at the same time, had this gift where you can get stuff that the smart part don't get. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I tend to think of it as, I don't know, I don't tend to think of it as left brain, right brain necessarily in terms of how I think about things. I think it came from the idea of, you know, I like to think of the string theory as the way that guides music properties as well as that binds the universe in terms of everything. And so by doing that, I use my creativity from the music side to add creative twists to things that are logical conclusions, like finding creative solutions to logical problems, even during my job, for example, that, you know, most people probably wouldn't think of right away, but I'd be like, well, you know, I mean, let's try this. I mean, I work in IT and cybersecurity, so I do a lot of those like logic-based problems. And I find myself being able to make these creative solutions because of my experience with music and everything too, right? And being classically trained in music too was huge. I mean, major, because classical music is the foundation for everything in music. Like there's not a single genre of music that cannot be traced back to classical music roots.
I agree with you. Yeah, we'll pray for you, Bubba Gump. I don't know if you were a few years, you know, the band Led Zeppelin?
The band, yeah.
Yeah, they are. If you had said no, I would say, gosh, I'm really old. But Led Zeppelin, they got sued because in the song Stairway to Heaven, there's a riff in there that's the same riff that another artist used as the backbone of his music.
Oh, no.
And you ever heard of it? It's something from Jiminy Crickets. There's a riff in there, an old classical rendition, Jiminy Crickets. And that same riff is in Stairway to Heaven and several other well-known songs, right? Hmm. So I don't know why I came that up with, but it's just like this skeleton of music. Have you ever heard a song that sounds like a song?
Say it one more time.
Have you ever heard a song that sounds like a song?
All the time.
You know what I'm saying? There's sequences that are redundant in music. I mean, how many notes do you have, really?
You only have so many. And technically there's infinite combinations, quote unquote, and I will put heavy quotes on that. But a good example would be pop music nowadays. They use the same 5-chord structure to make their entire everything. And so you can, when my ex-girlfriend who was non-denominational would ask me why I don't really like, you know, Christian music or mainstream Christian music, I was like, they all sound the same. They're the exact same song, basically just reused in different lyrics upon them, so it's not interesting to me, you know.
Do you know the dude in Megadeth, the founder? He was in Metallica. He got kicked out for drinking. Can you imagine get kicked out of Metallica for drinking?
That's hilarious.
But you know, he Dave Mustaine.
Oh yes,
and you know he's a big time Christian. I know a lot of people don't know that him. Now, he threw his bass player out last year.
Wow.
He got in trouble on FaceTime with a juvenile girl. But his bass player is a Lutheran minister. The bass player in Megadeth, Lutheran minister.
Wow.
They have a ministry called Mega Life. And they invite people in their homes to, they supply the wine and the Bible. And they have Bible. So cool. Bands and stuff, but what was I going to say that about? I had a reason for saying all that. What were we talking about? Oh, he came up with the sequence that a lot of the death metal bands, like Slayer, you know, the devil bands. He said something like, "Heavy metal is not of the devil, but there is a common rift that all the bad bands use in their music." That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, there was like the devil's chord or something like that people use. Yeah, I forgot what chord that was because I kind of steer away from that. See what happened?
Do you believe that?
Well, I don't necessarily think that music itself is evil. No, I don't know if, you know, necessarily that's, but I definitely can understand some bands using it on purpose to try to make that a theme. Something that I like to tell everybody that I talk to who believe that, no, the devil, you know, the Easter's pagan, all this stuff, that the devil doesn't have any power on his own. He can only corrupt that which is holy. And he does that all the time. He does that with, you know, St. Nicholas, who is now Santa Claus, who's this like goofy creature, right? And also like Easter Bunny being replacing the resurrection, basically, at this point. So, and the upside down cross being some sort of satanic symbol when it was actually a huge symbol of humility. Right. There's no way that unless they're intentionally trying to corrupt that message, that it's of the devil.
Well, maybe I should say this off air. I don't know. I study a lot, and I listened to quite a few podcasts. You know, it's true if you heard it on a podcast, but
absolutely.
You probably don't remember, but when I was a kid, there was a big thing called the Hare Krishna movement.
You ever heard of it?
Okay. I grew up 70s, 80s, right? And you go to airport, and it was a real big thing in the 70s and 80s. Real big. And it was just this shaman comes from India to New York City, Greenwich Village, and he started this thing called Hare Krishna. And this is what he said. And it does tie into what we're talking about. But
yeah.
He says that there's a certain chant you can do. And it's only got about 12 words to it. And I'll send it to you.
Okay.
He tells his followers, this is back in the 60s. He told his followers, if you simply chant this mantra, tune with a few words, just saying these words, whether you believe them or not, whether you're mocking it or not, no matter what, you will draw and invoke this deity for blessing your life, for blessing. Okay?
Wow.
And I'll let you know off air because I don't want Haley and Lou and Teresa and Bubba Gump and them chanting Eastern mantras all night and get possessed by the devil. But here's what it made me think about, because they have praying beads.
Yeah.
You know, that religion over there has praying beads for forever. And also they took something, they took yoga, the exercise, and brought it into there. Just like they got this, you know what I mean? They kind of
attacked
certain things, now they're identified with it. So a lot of people, they identify that type of music, metal, with the bad guy, when I think it's great music.
Absolutely. Like, I find metal very close to classical music in its themes and everything that you do with it. Like, you can do so much with metal. Like, you can have a blues theme to your solos. You can have a very marked theme to it. You can have, you know, crazy time signatures, and all sounds so good all the time. Well, not all the time, but you know what I mean. But there's so much variety you can do with it as opposed to like pop or country music or something like that. Country music is very like narrow in terms of what is considered country in the first place. And pop is like even narrower than that a lot of times. But metal, you see, it goes kind of like a very wide cone that kind of just endlessly exists, you know.
Like,
and say what?
Like a tree rising up with branches going everywhere.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's why I kind of got driven into that, because not gonna lie, when I was a really young kid, like in middle school age, you're gonna find this kind of crazy, but I was a huge Slipknot fan back in the day, and Korn, right? And I mean, Slipknot was seen as, you know, devil worshiping, and maybe at the time they didn't believe in God or anything, but I do think Corey, the lead singer, now does believe in God. But a lot of his themes are very dark and very very reverent to memento mori as a concept, right? And that's something that I can relate to now as a Catholic too.
Well, you know, have you heard of the band from Virginia Beach? Not Virginia, but they're from Richmond, Lamb of God.
They're my favorite band, actually.
What's the name of that good song they play?
Walk With Me in Hell.
the Momenta, Momentum.
Oh, Momentum More, yeah.
Yeah, I use it on TikTok all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that dude is good friends with the dude in Korn.
Brian Head?
Brian Head, the one that's become saved. Now, you know, he went to Mass a lot. He's got Catholic influences in his life.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah, I went to see them last year when they were here in Birmingham, Korn. You know, mm-hmm. And funny because, you know, you hear their lead singer, the way his talks in public. And he is in all that worship of the, I mean, he's got Ted Bundy's Volkswagen in his house. The serial killer, he bought it. He's messed up. I like the guy, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Just like that. I love the guy. He needs a few demons removed.
Well, he has so much that happened to him back when he was younger, too. I'm sure you've heard his song, Daddy, for example. It was very reminiscent of things that happened in abuses in his life, and I feel really bad for him, and I feel like that's another way to kind of just act out and show things off, too, because, I mean, I was huge into the horror genre as a younger kid, too, when I was an atheist, right? I felt like it was thrilling, like I needed something more to life than just day-to-day activities, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? We got a family member that's all into goth and Wicca and all that stuff. And I'm thinking if I could ever get her to a traditional Latin mass, I got her hooked. Give me those guys from Korn. But, you know, Brian, I've listened to him talk. He seems to have a genuine faith.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I could go hang out with Jonathan. And what's the other guy's name? Monkey or something, what do they call him?
Monkey, that's right, yes.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what they think about on the back of the tour, you know, talk about on the back of the tour. But you're saying that you believe that it's possible for a bona fide, devout, practicing Catholic to like that kind of music as long as, I'm not talking about singing demonic lyrics, but just the music.
Absolutely, because I feel like metal invokes emotion more than so than any other genre I've ever heard of. And I feel like emotion is very natural. I mean, God gave us these emotions for a reason, right? He doesn't give us these emotions to fight them all the time, right? I mean, in the extreme cases, of course, but metal relates to the human experience so much. And I feel like it's such a good avenue for Catholics, for faith-loving people to get into, because it's only of the devil if the people who are making it are intending it for that, right? And unless they are doing that, then the music's just music. It's just a human experience that people are sharing with you.
Let me ask you another question. So I didn't realize you were so, you know, gifted in the music part. What was I going to ask you? I am on medication. You all day with a bunch of fifth graders, your brain is fried at the end. Who was I going to ask you about? There's some, you know, John Michael Talbot. You ever heard of him?
Maybe.
He's pretty famous. He's going to be on this show soon, John Michael Talbot. But I'm going to ask you this, Slayer, okay? Musically, you know, I like Slayer.
Yeah.
And that Chilean dude, their lead singer, you know who I'm talking about? He's scary looking.
Yeah, they all had that little scary aesthetic, though.
Scary looking man to look at. But, you know, listen to him talk. He says he's 100% Catholic.
Yeah.
Devout, practicing. Yeah. Catholic, and he sings that garbage, and he says it's art. But then you got Marky Wahlberg. Everybody loves Marky Mark. He's Mr. Catholic, you know. Stay prayed up, get hallowed. He'll drop a string of F-bombs in every movie, you know.
And yeah,
he gets a pass. Marky Mark gets a pass for the F-word, every other word in the movie. But Slayer don't get a pass. even though they had Peter's cross. I'll just say it's Peter's cross that's spinning in the background. You know, the upside down.
Yeah, I've listened to Slayer on a few occasions. I wasn't necessarily huge into thrash metal when I was younger either. It was more of like a melodic death metal sort of thing for me. But when it came to Slayer, it was always the imagery, like the grotesque imagery of like murder and death that was like, people were like, oh my gosh, yeah, he'll see and all that stuff. But they don't actually understand what's going on in these songs, right? And a lot of themes, I think, are missed when you think that way too, right? And so, I mean, I don't know necessarily if he's Catholic. If he says, I believe you, but I don't necessarily know. I think that, you know, I don't, I used to curse like a sailor as well, so I won't, you know, say I didn't ever, but I feel like I used to think that swearing was an extreme expression of emotion, and I feel like that might be why that they're doing that in their music, because I think when you get to the point where you can be practicing anything, right, but as soon as you get into the realm of metal, there's so much secularism there, there's so much hedonism, there's so much you know, drug culture out there, it's easy to let things slip. And if the worst that they're doing is swearing, I don't want to say it's okay, because it's not technically okay, but it's better than doing that than doing the drugs and stuff.
Do you ever listen to Rammstein?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
The deal that, you know, I'm not going to mention her name. I've got a friend on Instagram, and you know, we talk occasionally, and she goes to church with two of them to mass.
Really?
And where they live, you know, she's got a few dollars because she's got a summer home and a winter home. Poor folks don't do that unless they're on a work camp, you know, but she. Her place in Berlin, it's a little village, and it's got a pub by where they have mass.
And wow.
For mass, they'll, you know, go over there and hit the pub and have a few and have some fellowship. Not the whole band, but two of them. I'm not saying it wrong. I believe the drummer. Hmm. And I know about the other one, because, you know, when I see them, they got all that makeup on.
I was going to say, if you said the singer, I would be kind of like, I don't know about that, because if you've seen the kind of get-ups he does in the band on concerts, I'd be like, I'm not quite sure that's the case. But
John, you know. Here's my question. Why is it okay for, and I don't, you never know who's watching these. You never know who's watching these YouTubes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the word goody two-shoes for Carrie Underwood. Okay. Yeah. I love Carrie Underwood. Love her. I've got nothing negative to say about her. Just absolutely love her.
But she's
talking about some bad stuff. Killing folks. You know, Black Cadillac. All those, you know, she's got a garbage in her lyrics. But it's, and she can show them legs up there on the stage, you know. But she's Christian and she's conservative. So she gets a pass. But then you get Miranda Lambert that's going to sing about Jesus and get sent to hell for being a party girl. So why is Slayer, you know, Slayer, they're the demon band and discounted, Rammstein. But then you bring in these country music stars, all they sing about is fornicating, being an alcoholic and adultery. That's the only three, and pickup trucks. That, you know, they only got about three topics they sing about.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest reason really is metal has this like sound, an aggressive sound, and people, if they've never really heard metal that much, never heard metal that much, they are scared by it at first because they're not sure what it is, especially if you expose them to stuff like Slayer or Rammstein, especially like. If you were to take someone who's a pop star their whole life and show them Rammstein live, they'd be like, I'm scared, dude.
Then the next thing they do is they want to go find a gym and start playing. Or let's go fight someone. You know, that's your inner Odin. You know what I mean?
I definitely know. I I listen to metal all the time while I lift at the gym too. And it helps. It really does help you get that little extra up and, you know, and going. And actually lately, funny enough, I've actually been listening to a lot of Gregorian chant while lifting weights. It kind of does the same thing.
If I was a musician, and I'm not, I want to blend, you know, the parts where, like, I go to an NO church, but everybody thinks it's Latin Mass because it's so hardcore proper.
Yeah. Like
that, and the pipe organ, we got a $3 million pipe organ.
Wow.
And those places where the organist is playing, that should be replaced by like a Metallica sound, guitar sound. But I don't know how to do it. And she's right. Lou's right. But if you get organ parts and replace them with, I don't know, I've heard it's called drop D. I don't know, but that, you know that sound you get through a Marshall amp?
Yeah. You know,
the Metallica sound.
Yeah.
Before they come out, he just plays a few riffs while the intro song's playing. Or like, you know how Korn does at the beginning of that, on their intro, Are You Ready?
Are you ready?
But they start playing right. It comes before it.
Yeah.
I want a blend of it, man.
I feel that. I think, you know, people sort of have to start realizing that metal is a very hardcore expression of emotion, as well as the idea of memento mori. Like, that's a huge Catholic theme across all of our history. Like, we remember death because we have to remember the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and his death. So, it's a death cult. Say what?
It's a death cult.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah, we're all pagan and everything, too.
You know, Peter Sarsgaard, the actor?
You can look it up. Yes.
Yeah, he said that's what drew him to Catholic. He said it's a death cult. He said you got to be all the way in or it ain't any good.
Mm-hmm.
And look at our themes. We just did Lent, you know, thorns, sackcloth, ashes on your forehead.
Yeah.
And it's all these hard things, you know, the prayer and the rosary and the, you know, the Tuesdays and the, you know, is it Tuesday and Friday? The rosary's got those, you know, brutal, torturous mysteries. You got the skulls everywhere. The bishop has a skull on his, the monks with their, you know, pulling mm-hmm. the baby. That's just what the religion is to me. It's a Viking.
It's a
Viking or something.
Yeah, I think modern day Christianity tries to, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. Since the Reformation, I feel like Protestants have slowly been stripping away everything that's holy about, you know, religion in general. But now we see modern day Christianity where they think it has to be pure, happy sunshine, you know, everything. And that's really not the story of the Bible at all. The story of the Bible is violent.
You know, the Puritans, you know, they rose up from the Church of England that Horny Henry started, and they wanted to purify the new church from everything. They broke altars, stained glass windows, chalice, anything Catholic. They scorched them, you know, and I just, you know, we need guys like you. Are you going to Palooza this summer?
I want to, but I don't know if I can this summer because I'm also trying to build a apologetics organization similar to Catholic Answers right now. So it's difficult, but it's I'm trying to work with a whole bunch of people and figure stuff out logistics wise and all that.
Harder than people think. We're trying, supposed to go to Atlanta tomorrow. I haven't heard from my son, but we're supposed to go to Atlanta and set up at a college campus and just ask survey questions. To, you know, 10 questions about what Catholics believe. We already know they're going to flunk the test because nobody knows what Catholics really believe. They don't know why. They don't know. Then you give them the answers and say, have a great day, and they can read them if they want to, but it's just an opening. So we'll have to get together on one of those. I think you'd be good at
That'd
it.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah, that'd be awesome. And I hear you on the whole, like, testing people on beliefs of Catholicism. I'm going to tell you what, TikTok is a cesspool of people who are just full of hate and people who are Protestants who believe that they know the truth and that their personal interpretation is the best. And so they'll come into my lives and say, why do you guys worship Mary? Why do you do this? we don't. And then when I say, oh, actually, we don't, but thanks for coming, they're just like, wait, what? There's no way. So they asked, they're asking, why this, why that? I was like, okay, well, do you know what typology is? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, have you heard of the Ark of the Old Covenant? We'll start there. And so I kind of explained, like, Ark of the Old Covenant, one of the statues and like the graven images you can get based on the cherubim on the Ark of the Old Covenant. But then you can explain how Mary represents the Ark of the Old Covenant with that argument as well. And you can show how the contents of the Ark of the Old Covenant is Jesus Christ, basically foretold in the Old Testament. So it's,
I guess I'm going back to what we talked about earlier. To me, Catholicism is simple logic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used to read the Bible, I had so many questions, you know, like, this does not make sense.
Yeah.
Or it's contradicting. James is contradicting Ephesians. And all. And then when you become Catholic, it's like these, you get these special glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And people are like, oh, what about Ephesians 2, 8 through 9? And I'm like, okay, well, did you read the 10 through 11 as well? Because that shows that there's good works for us to do anyway.
But then I told them,
yeah. Well, my favorite thing to ask Protestants when I argue, when I debate them, and I do plan to do more debates with the Protestants, primarily Calvinists, I think, to start with. But I ask them as qualifiers first. I go, do you believe that the whole Bible is true? And if they answer yes, which they should, then I'll be like, okay, cool. Then do you believe that there's contradictions in the Bible? If they say no, which they should, then we'll continue and say, all right, do you believe that God is the author of confusion? If you say no, which you should, fantastic. We have a great foundation to build off. And so all these verses I show you, you can't deny, especially in context. Like, you ask me why a priest can forgive sins, I'll show you John chapter 20, verse 19 through 23, and show you exactly that he breathed upon the apostles, making them God-breathed in that moment, authoritative, and says that you can forgive sins. And if you want to retain the sins, you can do that too, because you now have the authority to do this. I mean, they can't really refute that.
You're laying out the minefield, and then you're inviting the enemy troops to take a walk with you.
Exactly, exactly.
This place over here, you believe that?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't.
You know, they say, you know, the Bible, if it's not in the Bible, I don't believe it. Then I ask them, well, where do babies go when they die?
Yeah. Well, you know, because they don't have, you know, age of consent, or they can't have true faith. Maybe, well, gosh, golly, I don't know. Well,
then the babies in Israel, when they were being circumcised, they weren't making that choice.
That, and so I actually did a great dissertation with some of my friends, Protestants too, and another Catholic. I related Old Testament circumcision and how baptism replaces it through biblical verses entirely, all of it. And so I showed them, first of all, that circumcision was not just a mark of the flesh, but a circumcision of the heart to mark you as a follower of God. And then it shows in the Bible how the baptism is the new circumcision. It almost verbatim says that.
Yeah.
And then you get the 1 Peter 3:21, where it shows, just like the water of Moses of the flood saved 8 people, so too does baptism now save.
Is that in the scripture in Colossians about baptism and water?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in Colossians?
I believe it's Colossians, yeah.
Well, I went to the Presbyterian Calvinist church off and on my whole life. So I pretty much knew about the 5 solas, you know, Tula, all that stuff ahead of time. And I remember tossing and turning, trying to reconcile it with the other 900 verses that unwound it, you know.
And, you know, I have such a problem with the solas, mainly because of the way that they're presented linguistically, I think, is that they're saying only faith, only scripture, only this. But you can't have multiple onlys, because that's just logically impossible. If you were to say, like, I believe that the Bible's true, this, that, sure, we'll go off that. But you can't say only.
Right. It's like I'm going to the movie only with Jonathan, and only with Lou, and only with Patrick. And, you know,
yeah.
you're a carload.
Yep. A whole bunch of hypocrites.
I used to have an anti-Catholic website, and one of my things was trying to talk about the five amigos. That's what I call my soul is the five amigos. And I was called British guy. And he says, for someone by himself, he sure's got a lot of him going on. And it aggravated me because he made more sense than I did.
Golly. And I tell you, like, people who are like, well, if it's not biblical, I won't believe it. Just like you were saying earlier, right? And I messaged someone too. I was like, okay, well, can you prove that soul scripture, you know, only the scripture is what we should be using for our soul infallible rule of faith? Because if that was true, you would have to think it would be in the Bible to say it's true, right? Because that would just make sense. But they're I don't think they're quite catching on to that point, are they?
Well, that, and, you know, to me, why have a sermon if you're really sola scriptura? Isn't every sermon beyond sola scriptura? The one teaching it is fallible.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, it reminds me, sorry to interrupt you, of the verse where it says that the hypocrites were preaching in the street corners and in the temples and everything, right? So I was like, sounds like a lot of these preachers who are up in the pulpit all the time.
Yeah. I just, I don't get it, man. It's just, if I had some event that got me out of being Catholic, I truly do not know where I would go, because every denomination, I just see it like a fishnet, just hold like a cargo net, like the Marines used to climb up on, just holes. I'd have to be a pagan Christian. I believe in Jesus. That's it. You know what I mean? I mean, I couldn't leave Jesus, but I could not go to one of these anti-Eucharist churches. Couldn't do it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was also researching Protestant churches as part of my faith journey, because I wanted to give them all a fair chance just in case, you know, I found truth in any of them. But for some reason, something did not sit right with me, how the center of their church was a stage with a guy with a spotlight just talking. I'm like, something about this does not seem of God, because it seems like there's more. It's more about fame, or more about the spotlight and sharing that spotlight than anything else. And then it becomes a rock concert for like for the rest of it. You know, we get about 15, 20 minutes of sermon, and then the rest of it's all concert, and that's their worship.
Yeah,
I mean, huh?
Yeah, you're right. You know the word pastor in the singular tense? It's in the one time in the singular tense. The word just by itself, pastor.
Hmm.
One time. From Genesis to Revelation.
Where was that?
Ephesians 4:11.
Ephesians 4:11.
That's the only place in the Bible. Yet they make a doggone huge deal out of one word in the whole Bible. But mention Pope, and they lose it, man.
They lose their mind.
Someone asked me, where's Pope in the Bible? I said, in there like 700 times, it's the word Father.
I mean, I try to explain Matthew 16:18 to people, because, initially when people, like, look at that verse, people are like, well, is this based on Peter's confession? I'm like, okay, well, do you believe that name changes are significant in the Bible? Because Jesus doesn't do this just for buns and funsies, you know. He named him Kephas, or also meaning rock, for this exact moment, saying that you are Simon Peter, on this rock I will build my church, the gates will not prevail against it, and you now have the keys to heaven. You can bind and loose anything on earth as you want in heaven too. And that's an enormous level of authority. Like, and everywhere in the Bible, you see Peter being mentioned first. He was also the only apostle, only other person in the Bible who was able to walk on water with Jesus.
Yeah.
He's a major theme.
You know, even if you was able to argue Peter out of the equation, you're left with the church with full authority to make law and to end laws.
Yep.
Biden. Yep. change, you know, begin or end. You know, have you ever read the book, The Four Witnesses?
I have not. No, I need to do that probably.
It's a good one. It's everything that Clement and Linus and Peter and that other one, everything that they wrote. Hey, Chelsea Powers. And it's just real interesting that that he emphasized, even if you get rid of Peter, Matthew 16, you're left with the original church Jesus started that had absolute power and authority.
Exactly. Yep.
Letting people in and out of heaven. Mm-hmm. For you back up, whatever you say here, I'll back up. People are going to look at that verse of what it's actually saying.
Nope. And I feel like a lot of Protestants also just ignore church history entirely because they don't want to be reminded of that, because I think a lot of pastors know the history. They just disagree on certain things, and they don't want their congregations to know this because they know that a lot of people will research it and they will turn Catholic. Like, for example, I mentioned to a whole bunch of like fundamentalist, non-denomination, whatever they are, and they were having a Bible study about why, you know, these things are important. Why should we have one church or a unity under one church? You know, it's the body of invisible believers. And I brought up the Ignatius of Antioch, and they're like, well, I don't care what a human says. I'm like, oh, but wait, I wasn't done yet. This guy's a direct descendant or disciple of John the Apostle. So you would have to say, if you don't trust his word, why would you trust any of the Bible?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I my favorite thing recently is to read Ignatius' letters to the Smyrnians, the people, because I tell you what, that is chock full of talking about unity, talking about how division is of the devil. And if the bishop doesn't directly approve something, then you are doing the devil's will. It's crazy.
Why is it that, you know, Paul himself spoke against factions?
Mm-hmm.
You know, division in the church. I'm a Paul, I'm a Silas, I'm a Fred, or whatever he said. That's evident enough. They say they go with the scripture. Why do they reject stuff like that? God's not the author of confusion. But you got
it's not convenient.
It's what?
It's not convenient, I guess.
I just don't get it, man. I don't get it.
And it's funny because a lot of Baptist factions I know of preach Paul's message almost like more prominently than everything else in the Bible.
Oh, over Jesus in a heartbeat.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hilarious to me because, one, the name of Baptist, that's ironic because they don't even believe that baptism saves. And then, two, they follow Paul's writings when they're schismatics themselves. It's like you're hypocrites at this point.
Yeah, I don't get it, Jonathan. I don't. It's frustrating because, you know, I'm not at TikTok as much as, you know, rest of TikTokers, but I hate to say that there's some dummies in that comment section, man. I don't even want to answer them because it's really like talking to a kid. I teach kindergarten and I hear these simple ass questions all day. And then you're going to knock the Catholic Church about something that's so elementary and so easy to figure out. I just don't get it. I need charity.
It's something so funny because when I was talking to people, they were like, oh, you know, Constantine started the Catholic Church in 325 AD. I was like, something doesn't add up because all the records of history and through the Vatican website show that there's almost 30 popes before the time of Constantine was even born. And he was responsible for tolerating Christianity at the time. Yeah. For sure. He started tolerating because he had this vision that helped him win a war about a cross. And so, yeah, sure. And then the Arian heresy happened around there. That's why Nicaea happened originally. And so then they think, then there's, oh gosh, I had a gentleman yesterday who was saying that Council of Nicaea was made to put in place that black people were bad. And I'm like, I don't know what you're going about.
Black people?
Yeah, yeah, they're starting to say that Council of Nicaea was to put black people down and to control them. I'm like,
no, that was
have you read Nicaea?
bench in August of 1845, because that's why they were founded.
Slavery.
Jesus. I could eat this like a, I get so irritated at it. But look, well, man, how do people, can you tell us how to find you on social media if we want to ask you questions or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. So on TikTok, I am Hard Damascus, all one word. That kind of plays back into my story, the name of it, as well as on YouTube, which I will be hopefully using very soon to promote stuff. And then you can also, you can message me, and my inboxes are open on TikTok all the time. So if you want to join Discord, if you're a Catholic, we have a Catholic Discord for a community of people. And we are allowing people to talk there, speak apologetics, ask questions that are like hardcore apologetic questions. And we do our best to answer them to the best of our ability. It also offers opportunity to research these topics for the future.
Well, that's real good. So Heart of Damascus.
Yep.
Okay. All right, man. That Discord, join Discord, Patrick says. My son, Brian, I'm going to put your links on here tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Okay. And all this will be on Spotify in the next couple of days. But I'm not going to try to do what I usually do and go in there bleary-eyed and start, so I ain't going to mess it up this time. This was really good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fantastic meeting you, and thank you so much for having me on.
All right, man. Well, I'll send you the lyrics to that chant you're not supposed to chant.
I won't sing it. Don't worry. Or think about it.
I'll send you a pod. It's just fascinating. But I love you, brother. I'll be praying for you.
And God bless you guys.
Thank you, Lou and Patrick and Connor. And I'll shoot you a text in a little bit, okay?
All right. Have a great night.
Thank you. Bye.